arms tighten around me. It takes me a moment longer to realize, one, we're still in the sky, and two, Des makes for a surprisingly good bed. I glance beneath us and notice that we're beginning to descend onto yet another floating island that is not Somnia. Now Des's earlier cryptic questions about my interest in his kingdom become clearer. He's taking me on a tour of his realm. I try to remember just how many floating islands he rules over, but at the moment I'm totally drawing a blank. All I manage to piece together is that we're going to visit several of them. This one looks fun. Even far away, I can already see that. Everywhere I look, there are strings of colorful lights illuminating the buildings. Not like the lights you might see at Christmas, but the kinds you might find outside a cantina. The bright flowering plants and trees that grow here have a tropical feel to them, as does the balmy night air. It's not until we get closer that I make out a series of bar fights happening in the streets. Those fairies who aren't fighting are drunkenly staggering on and off the pavement, except, of course, for the lovely couple that might or might not be getting it on against the side of one of the buildings. All right. We land outside what looks to be a gambling hall, the fairies inside clustered around several tables where more fae are rolling sets of dice. I slip out of Dez's arms, looking around me. What is this place?
Barbos, the City of Thieves.
Of course, Des rules over an island fondly known as the City of Thieves. We start walking and, oh God, everything hurts. I mean everything. Whatever that horrible place was in Philia where we trained, it worked me over good. I groan as we walk, rubbing my backside. Des, I think he broke my ass. He shoves his hands into the pockets of his leather pants.
Cherub, you'll be making different moans when I break your ass.
Sweet Lord of heaven and earth. Blood rushes to my face. To my horror, my skin begins to brighten. Bad, Siren, bad. Like a thaw. That will only ever happen in your dreams. Des stops and catches my jaw in his hand, forcing me to look in his eyes.
You know, the endearing thing about you is that you still say things like that, even though you owe me a wrist full of debt.
His thumb strokes the side of my face. I swallow, not sure if the excitement I feel is from dread or anticipation. He pulls me in close.
Careful with your words, mate,
he says, his voice more serious than before.
I'd gladly take them on as a challenge.
He releases my face, strolling forward once more. I stand in place for several seconds before I pull myself together. I want a divorce, I finally declare.
Sorry, Cherub,
he says over his shoulder,
but that sore ass of yours is mine, whether you like it or not.
I make a face at his back.
Saw that.
Good, I say, and then I proceed to ignore him. I don't know whether Des is still working his illusionary magic because people aren't fawning over him, but me, they're checking out. Their eyes linger on my wings and my forearms, but I don't see fear or pity in their eyes. If anything, they look intrigued. Self-consciously, I reach around me and run a hand over one of my wings.
They don't see your features as you do,
Des says, still not turning around from where he strolls ahead of me. I furrow my brows. He stops, waiting for me to catch up to him.
Fae come in all shapes and sizes, he explains. Seeing someone that looks as you do does not seem strange to us. To us, you're a beautiful human with wings, and that's both exotic and appealing.
I glance down at what I can see of my dark wings, the iridescent feathers shimmering green under the light. It's hard to wrap my mind around what he's saying, and even harder to try to reframe how I see myself. Exotic, appealing. Those words are a far cry from the ones that come to mind when I look in the mirror. Monstrous, mutated. I'm ashamed to admit that those appreciative stares soothe a part of my broken self-confidence.
You should really remember that, Cherub,
Des says.
Especially when you meet some of the elites from other realms. They'll find you just as attractive as all of these fairies do. Perhaps more so because you're mine. but they will try to mask whatever they feel with disgust or some other emotion made to make you feel small.
These fae sound like charming people. Wait, I glance at Dez. When I meet other elites? Chapter 11. No, I am not about to meet other elites. Yes, I likely will at some point in time. No, not tonight. Yes, Dez cares about my feelings. No, caring about my feelings won't get me out of meeting said elites when the time comes. Apparently, meeting important fae is part of this whole soulmate package thingy I signed on for. Blech. If I could live my life without meeting another high-powered fae, I'd consider it a win. Dez is more than enough. Dez stops me in front of a tavern, and I give it a good once-over. It looks just like the others. Same carved wood facade, same bright lights strung up over its awning, same gummy look that suggests the place has endured decades of beer spills. Honestly, this is my kind of bar. Fun, no frills, good alcohol. The only drawbacks to this situation are that, one, we're in the other world, not Earth, and two, I can't drink, thanks to a repayment Dez took from me weeks ago. Oh, and three, I'm walking into a bar still wearing my training leathers. At this point, the outfit is more leather cutouts than actual leather. The bargainer opens the door for me, and the two of us step inside the pub. One by one, the rowdy patrons notice us. Within seconds, the place goes deathly silent. Was that supposed to happen? I whisper to Dez. He doesn't bother responding. At the far end of the room, a chair scrapes back and a huge, hulking fairy steps forward. Though it's a bit of a stretch to call him a fairy, at least by my own definition of the word. The man's scarred face, torn leathers, and wild red hair make me think he's less a fairy and more a pirate. His golden brown eyes are harsh as he stalks towards me and Dez. No one else in the establishment moves, all eyes riveted to us.
"What the hell are you doing here, bastard?"
he asks, his voice gravelly. My eyebrows shoot up. I don't think that, aside from me, I've heard anyone insult the bargainer to his face. A different sort of unsettling silence now cloaks the room, like someone lit a match over a pile of gunpowder and everyone is preparing themselves for the explosion to come. And then, like something from a movie, both men laugh and embrace each other in a bone-crushing hug. What? I stare at them incredulously. For the life of me, I'll never understand men, no matter what world they come from. The roguish fairy pulls away to look my mate over.
How the hell are you, Desmond?
Desmond. No wonder the whole room went still. These people recognize their king. He must have lifted whatever enchantment he placed on himself right before we stepped inside the bar. Dez nods, a sly smile spreading across his face.
Real good, my brother. Real good. Ha! I know that smile,
the red-headed fairy says, clapping him on the back.
Whose fortune have you swindled this time? Or,
his eyes swivel to me,
is it a wife you've stolen? It's been a while since you last brought a girl here, you scoundrel.
Ooh, cringy cringe. I could have lived without knowing that. To me, the red-headed man says,
beware of this one.
He shakes Dez's shoulder.
He likes to ruin his women before he cuts them loose.
Ruin his women? A hot wave of jealousy rises in me. Dez's expression sobers up.
It's not like that. At all.
His eyes land heavily on mine, and I think he's trying to beam me an apology. I suppose the situation is only fair. After all, Dez had to quietly endure 7 years of me hooking up with other men while he waited for me to unknowingly repay my final wish back. I can grit my teeth through a little of Dez's own dating history. The red-headed fairy reassesses me. This time, he must notice something he hadn't before because he says,
she's not just any girl, is she?
No. Dez is still flashing me an intense, heated look. He stares at the bargainer for a moment longer, and then his eyebrows rise.
Oh, he says. This is the girl you've been searching for.
Des nods. The fairy turns to me again and he sweeps me up into a hug that practically chokes the breath out of me.
Welcome to the family, then,
he says, his voice rumbly.
My sincerest apologies go out to you for getting stuck with the bastard for a mate.
He finally lets me go, looking from me to Des like a proud father. This is so weird.
Ah, me,
he says, sucking in a deep breath through his nostrils.
This changes things for the better.
He claps Des on the side of his arm. Then, seeming to remember that the two of us are just standing there in the threshold of the bar, he says,
Well, come on. Let me get the bastard and his bride a drink. It's the least I can do.
I'm no one's bride, but I don't bother correcting Redhead. I'm living with Des, making love to Des, and I'm bonded to Des. A ring and a piece of paper seem like superfluous details at this point. Why does he keep calling you bastard? I ask Des when his roguish friend leads us toward one of the grimy tables. The noise of the tavern escalates once more.
Because I am one,
Des says. I thought you knew your father, I say. In the book I'd read, hadn't it stated that the King of the Night was born into the royal harem? Wouldn't he have known his father if this were the case?
I found out who he was when I was a teenager,
he says.
Before that,
Des continues,
I was referred to as the bastard.
I feel the blood drain from my face. I've called you that, I say, mortified. I had never considered the term as an actual label. Des's friend stops at a table and Des and I slide in.
Cherub,
he says, his voice low.
I assure you it's fine.
I don't feel fine about it. The bargainer's red-headed friend sits down across from us, thumping the table.
Three meads,
he calls out to the bartender at the back of the room. When his attention returns to us, his eyes twinkle.
Desmond, my old friend, you've not officially introduced me to your mate.
Des leans an arm on the gummy wooden surface. He looks over at me.
Callie,
he gestures to Redhead.
This no-good son of a bitch is Phaedron. Phaedron, this is my mate, Calypso.
Phaedron takes my hand.
It truly is a pleasure,
he says, his voice turning serious. Not knowing what else to do, I nod, giving his hand a squeeze. It's nice to meet you. Phaedron is clearly another one of Des's old friends, which is baffling to me. I'm still getting used to the fact that someone like the bargainer has friends, and technically more of them than me. That's somehow really depressing. A new group of fairies enters the bar. Most are women, though there's two men amongst them. They walk through the room, their outfits low-cut and largely transparent. All of them move from table to table, their hands gliding over the shoulders and arms of many of the patrons. Phaedron sees me staring.
Prostitutes,
he says. I give him a look. I wasn't born yesterday. I swear I have a filter, I just don't always use it. Phaedron breaks out into a smile, eyeing me up and down.
And the bastard found his match.
He leans forward.
Tell me, Desmond, are all human women this feisty on earth?
Des flashes him a rakish smile.
Only the best ones. Aye.
Phaedron laughs.
And they're firebrands in bed.
I raise my eyebrows at that. The conversation is interrupted by the bartender who drops off our drinks. I make a moo of disappointment as I stare at the glass of amber liquid set in front of me.
Still can't drink.
On the other side of the room, one of the patrons whistles.
My king,
he calls out, leaning back in his seat.
When are you going to come over and greet an old friend?
A slow, lazy grin snakes across Des's face.
I was hoping to avoid that fate,
he shouts back. I watch all of this in wonder. I'm seeing yet another side of Des, one that's crude and raw and rough around the edges. I don't say it, but right now he reminds me of all the Palydia officers and bounty hunters I worked with as a private investigator. I'm not surprised to find I like this side of him a great deal, despite his crassness. The fairy lets out a cackling laugh.
Aye, you still might. My arse is too ancient to leave this seat.
But not too ancient to get you here,
Des notes. The fairy cackles again, his friends joining in. I can tell Des wants to go talk to what appears to be yet another friend. I bump him with my shoulder. Go. I nod to his friend. Des hesitates, and then, making a decision, he stands, grabbing his drink.
I'll just be a minute,
he promises. I watch him as he saunters away, kicking out a spare chair next to the fairy and straddling it backwards.
What have you done to my friend?
Phaedron asks. I give him a quizzical look. I have no idea what you're talking about. Phaedron shakes his head.
He waited until you gave him permission before he got up to talk. And since you two entered, there have been at least two different opportunities Desmond would have bargained something away from you if he wanted to.
I furrow my brows. He makes bargains here? In the other world?
Oh, aye, all the firkin' time. Less now, of course, because he's king, but back when he still lived here, he could rob the green from grass, he was that good.
I know just how good Des can be. I think he already had plenty of leverage over me. I hold up my wrist, showing Phaedron the rows and rows of my black beads. Each one of these represents a favor I owe Des. He squints at the bracelet.
So that's how he caught you, sly devil.
I lean forward, laying my hands flat on the table. That's how I caught him, I correct. Phaedron barks out a laugh.
Desmond is more of a scoundrel than I give him credit for, if you let you believe that. No way in hell he'd let so many favors go unpaid unless he planned on keeping you, either with your consent or against your will.
Against my will? My thoughts must be written on my face, because Phaedron explains.
You must not know much about fairies,
he says.
No fairy would let his mate get away just because she put up a little protest.
That's more than a little horrifying. Des isn't like that. Phaedron snorts.
The king of the night?
Our eyes move to where Des sits, laughing and slapping the back of some fae with several tattoos on his face.
He's the worst of them.
I don't believe that, I say. There have been a few times where Des's fae side got the better of him, but he always snapped out of it, and always for my sake. Phaedron eyes me up and down.
Maybe you just haven't resisted him enough to push him to the edge.
That shuts me up. I never was one for playing hard to get when it came to the bargainer. It had always been Des for me, and he and I both knew that.
Trust me,
Phaedron continues.
The man is desperate for you. He might not say it, but...
His eyes return to Des, whose own gaze has inadvertently found mine. The bargainer gives me a wink when he notices me staring.
Put up some true resistance,
Phaedron says.
And you'll see. He won't let you go.
How is it that one sentence can fill you both with such satisfaction and such dread? More than anything, I love the idea that Des wants to be mine every bit as much as I want to be his. But to think that he'd force me to stay at his side, that there's a part of him that would cast aside my own wants and needs, that's frightening. That's not Des, it's not. But I decide I don't want to argue Phaedron on this point all evening. How do you and Des know each other? I ask, changing the subject. Phaedron takes a swig of his mead before responding.
He joined the Angels of Small Death when I was its leader.
My eyebrows hike up. It's not like I'm surprised Phaedron was the leader of a gang or that Des became close with him. I think I'm most surprised about the fact that Des, a fey king, and I are here in this bar on Barbos hanging out with Phaedron, who's probably a career criminal. Hell, I'm probably sitting in a room full of criminals.
and the King of the Night isn't punishing them, he's catching up with them. Phaedron leans forward.
Now tell me, do you have a sister?
Someone screams, thankfully interrupting us. The table in the corner topples over, mead splashes everywhere, and the previously seated fairies now lunge at each other. Everyone who's not in the fight swivels their gaze to Dez. In response to the growing eyes on him, Dez raises his glass in a silent toast to the room. A triumphant shout goes up, and suddenly it's not just the corner table of fairies who are fighting. Fae from nearby tables get involved. Glass shatters, tables break, and fists fly. Those involved in Barbos's skin trade scream, slipping off of laps to move to the outside edges of the room.
It's not a truly successful night until at least one fight breaks out,
Phaedron notes, grabbing his drink as he stands. Dez comes over.
Time to go, Cherub.
You both are welcome to come over to my place. I'll be heading over there in another hour or so,
Phaedron says.
We've got plans, but thanks, my brother.
You take care of your little mate,
Phaedron says to Dez, winking my way.
Don't give me a reason to come after you. I can still kick your ass. And for God's sakes, man, next time stay for a bit longer. I barely had enough time to start corrupting your girl.
Fair enough,
Dez says, clasping his hand.
Take care of yourself.
We part ways with the red-headed fairy to the sounds of breaking glass and shouting. The streets of Barbos are just as rowdy. More fairies in the flesh trade are out, flirting with disreputable men and women. There are a few more fights on the street, a group of fairies catcalling to a woman that blows them a kiss, and another who's standing on a rooftop, breathing fire from his lips, the inferno taking the shape of a dragon. And then there's everyone else. Fairies dancing on balconies, flying drunkenly from building to building, or passed out on the city streets. We pass by tiki torches, the closest thing this city has to gaslights, and the flickering firelight dances along Dez's face, making me feel like I'm in another time as well as another place. Dez takes a deep breath of air.
There's nothing quite like Barbos,
he says, sounding invigorated. What had Phaedron said earlier? That Dez used to live here? I could easily imagine the bargainer haunting these streets, making deals with drunks, thriving in the night. If Dez were a city, he'd be Barbos. The lights, the chaos, the criminality, the sexuality, the excitement. It's all a part of who he is. Most of the stores we pass are bars, brothels, or gambling halls. On the sidewalks in front of them are street vendors selling their wares. Dez stops us in front of one. I glance down at the items laid out. Knives? I ask, raising my eyebrow.
Daggers, swords, maces, axes,
he corrects, pointing to each different weapon, like there's some sort of difference to them.
I figure now that I'm teaching you how to fight, you should carry your own weapon.
My eyes slide from him back to the blades. I've never exactly been a weapons kind of lady. That's more Temper's thing. And looking at all those sharp objects now, I find I'm still not really one. The woman selling the weapons begins explaining the pros and cons of different grips and blade lengths. It all turns into background noise. When I look at them, I see blood and violence and memories I've been running from. Dez leans in close.
You are no victim, Cherub,
he reminds me.
Not even here in the other world. Pick a weapon. Make the next person that crosses you regret it.
Those are the devil's words, wicked words. But the siren in me rallies at them. Hell, the broken girl in me rallies at them. I am no one's victim. I begin studying the weapons in earnest, comparing the leather handles to the metal ones, the curving blades to those with jagged edges. Move your hand over them, the fairy behind the table suggests. The right one will call out to you. I shake my head, ready to tell her I'm not a fairy and that their magic will be useless on me, but Dez takes my hand and steadies it over the table, my palm facing down towards the weapons. His meaning is clear. Give it a try. When he releases my wrist, I take a deep breath. This is not going to work. I begin to move my arm anyway, sweeping it over the table of wares.
Slower, the seller instructs.
Setting my skepticism aside, I slow my movements. At first, nothing happens. Surprise, surprise. Just as I'm about to turn to Dez to tell him so, I feel it. It's just a little tug, but it draws my attention back to the table. All right, so this particular brand of fey magic might work on me after all. Like a magnet, my hand moves to the right side of the table. It slows, then stops. I move my hand away to see what weapon I unwittingly picked out. The dagger is no more than a foot and a half long from hilt to tip. The handle is made from Labradorite stone, and carved into the blade itself are the phases of the moon. For a weapon, it's awfully pretty.
A wise choice, the seller comments. The blade is made from the mines closest to the Kingdom of Death, and its metal is infused with the blood of Titans. The hilt is crafted with the stone of many faces, a powerful weapon made for a worthy individual.
Cool beans. I'm just glad my hand didn't land on the huge battle axe on the other end of the table.
We'll take the set and a belted holster,
Dez says, stepping up to my side.
From behind the counter, the seller pulls out another blade, the twin of the one I picked out, as well as the holster.
I hesitate. I don't have money for this.
Dez looks at me like I'm precious before handing over coins to the woman.
It's a gift.
I'm used to gifts from Dez. Back when I was a teenager, he'd buy me all sorts of trinkets. But I'm no longer a teenager, and these blades are no trinkets. Still, I accept them. I take the daggers and holster from the woman, running my hands over them.
Put it on,
he urges. I don't need much more encouragement. I may still have my reservations about owning a weapon, but I'm not going to lie. Securing the belted holster to my waist and arranging those daggers onto either side of my hips makes me feel powerful, dangerous. For the first time since I arrived in the other world, I feel like myself again. All it took were a couple of weapons.
Chapter 12.
Dez hasn't talked much about Orestes by the time we leave Barbos for the smallest of the Night Kingdom's floating islands, so I don't have any expectations. I fly next to Dez, heedless of his mood. The night air ruffles my hair like a lover, the warm air current carrying me and Dez across his realm. Flying is still just as thrilling as the first time I took to the sky, and I briefly wonder how I'll ever return to Earth. Before Dez taught me to fly, all I wanted was for my animalistic features to disappear. Now I don't know whether I'll ever be willing to give them up to be normal. Sure, the wings make things like getting through narrow doors and sleeping on my back nearly impossible, but they've also introduced me to a whole other side of myself. One that's wilder and freer than Calypso Lilis, the lonely PI. It's a fairly long flight to Orestes, and when I finally do see the island, I'm surprised by how dark it is. Most of the places we've visited so far have been brightly lit. Only Memnos, the land of nightmares, was anywhere near this dark, and that sends a wave of trepidation through me. I catch a brief glimpse of the underside of the island where hundreds, if not thousands, of caves dot the rocky surface. A few minutes later, Orestes is beneath us, and I get my first good look at the Night Kingdom's smallest and poorest island. I see a series of homely cottages clustered along a shallow stream, the water sparkling under the starlight. Strange plants grow in and around the edges of the riverbed, but outside of that, the place is a desert. Dez is quiet as the two of us land in the shimmery sand that covers much of what I can see. The island is small, probably only 10 miles across or so. Some of the other floating islands seemed massive, but this place feels like an afterthought, forgotten by most of the other world. Maybe that's why I like it. There's something about how lonely and overlooked it is that appeals to me. And out here, so far away from any city light, it feels like it's just me and Dez and an endless ocean of stars.
This is where I grew up,
he says, so softly I almost miss it. My attention snaps from the barren landscape to him.
You did?
It seems impossible that someone as beautifully complex as Dez came from this strained, desolate place. His eyes have a faraway look to them, like he's lost in a memory.
My mother worked as the town scribe.
He points to a cluster of buildings in the distance.
She used to come home smelling of parchment, her fingers stained with ink.
I barely breathe, afraid that anything I say will halt this story in its tracks.
We were so poor that we didn't live in a proper house.
Dez looks both pained and happy as he recalls it.
We lived in the caves of Orestes.
Can I see where you lived? I ask. All expression wipes clean from Dez's face.
It no longer exists.
His eyes meet mine.
But I can show you the caves.
I duck my head as I move through the caverns beneath Orestes' surface. The rock here has formed into a maze of honeycomb-like structures. There's a sad beauty to this place, like a rainbow in an oil slick. The tunnels are cold and drafty, claustrophobic and wet. Dez lived here. My mate, the king of the night, spent days, years in these caves. It seems an unusually cruel existence in a place as magical as the other world. So your mother raised you here? I ask. His mother, the scribe. The same woman Dez claimed would have liked me. The same woman who must have once been part of the royal harem. Dez nods, his jaw hard as we wind our way through the tunnels. I glance around at the gloomy caverns. There's a dark sort of magic here, deep within the rock. It's made of desperation and wishes, of unfulfilled desires and dreams that are kept locked away. How is it that a son born into a royal harem ends up here? And how is it that a boy who grew up here becomes king? What about your father? I press, sidestepping a puddle.
Funny you should ask that.
The way he says this makes me think it's not funny at all. He lets his words fade into nothingness, and I don't press him for more. Ahead of us, the tunnel opens up into a crater the size of a football field. Up until now, we've been below ground, but here the stars twinkle overhead, shining down into the bowl-shaped depression. Dez steps ahead of me, his huge boots kicking up dust as he heads across it. Near the center of the crater, he kneels. It's all I can do not to stare at him. His white hair, his broad, muscular back, his tattoos, and those wings that he stubbornly refuses to hide all look so very appealing. So very appealing and so very tragic. He's my own personal brand of salvation, yet right now I get the impression he's the one who needs saving. I come up behind him, placing my hand on his shoulder.
This is where my mother died.
He says quietly. I feel my stomach drop at his confession. There are no words. Dez's eyes move to mine. It's rare for him to wear his thoughts on his face, but right now he doesn't bother keeping me out, and I get an acute glimpse of all that pain bottled up inside him.
I watched her die.
My throat closes up. I can't begin to imagine. It's one thing to witness your monster of a stepfather bleed out on your kitchen floor, another to watch someone you love die. I circle around to the front of Dez, and his arms come around my waist. He lifts the hem of my shirt to press a kiss against the soft skin of my stomach, his thumbs rubbing back and forth over my skin. I run my hands through his hair, loosening the locks from the leather band holding them back. This tragedy might have happened years and years ago, but right now it looks like it's all playing out in my mate's memory as though the events were fresh. What happened? I ask softly. I almost don't ask at all. God knows there are so many memories that I hate sharing. He looks up at me, his white hair loose.
My father happened.
Chapter 13. My father happened. If that's not foreboding, I don't know what is. Dez stands, his wings expanding behind him. He clears his throat.
Enough of this.
He takes my hand.
There's one more place I want to take you before we return to Somnia.
I'm still burning to ask Dez about his parents, but it's clear from his body language that he's done sharing secrets for the night. Perhaps for many nights. Reluctantly, I take to the sky alongside him. I have no idea where he's taking me, but when Orestes falls away beneath us, I realize that'll be the extent of our visit. There will be no tour of the island's remaining highlights, no further exploration of its topography, no more discussion about Dez's life here. It's that last one that I want to know about most. I keep gleaning pieces of Dez's past from various sources, but it has raised more questions than it has answered. What I know, Dez was born into the Night Kingdom's royal harem but raised on Orestes. He moved to Barbos and joined a brotherhood, and at some point he became a medaled soldier and a king. He watched his mother die, and he blames his father. Oh, and during all this time he was building a career for himself on Earth as the bargainer. What I don't know? Pretty much everything else. The wind ruffles his hair and clothes as we fly. Out here in the middle of the night sky, he looks completely at ease. I can't tell if it's a carefully crafted mask or if he really did leave his agony back on Orestes. I can, however, finally see that the enigmatic bargainer has demons of his own. This flight is quite a bit longer than the others, and by the time we descend, my body is exhausted. The floating island we come upon seems to be made up of glowing pools and moonlit meadows. Scattered here and there are elaborate villas and a few temples, each some distance away from one another. Off in the distance is a shimmering city, its white walls lit up with lights. Dez heads straight for it. As we close in on it, the scattered homes begin to cluster closer and closer together, gradually changing from rural to urban. The city itself sits on the edge of the island, the white buildings built along its cliffside. Winding through the island is a glowing river, its waters a luminescent aquamarine color. When it reaches the edge of the island, it spills over the side, the waterfall turning to mist hundreds of feet below. We circle past the city center and follow the river upstream, doubling back towards the interior of the island. We soar over hills, the river a glowing ribbon far below us. Soon the hills become mountains, their sides covered in dense, flowering foliage. We only begin to descend when we come to a particularly large mountain peak. Here a palatial white stone home sits, adorned with all the Moroccan accoutrements that Dez's palace has. Dez and I circle around it, landing in its front courtyard. The only sounds around us are the soft calls of cicadas and the hiss of rushing water. I spin around, taking in the impressive building and the mountain beyond it.
"Welcome to Lefis,"
Dez says.
"The city of lovers."
He takes my hand, leading me through the home with its cathedral ceilings and tiled floors, the only light coming from the dozens of brightly colored lanterns that hang from the ceiling above us. The edges of arched doorways are inlaid with more painted tiles, the colors emerald, indigo, and persimmon. Thick painted columns hold the sweeping ceilings up, making the place feel even vaster than it already is. Much as I want to drink in this place, we don't linger inside for long. The two of us exit out the back of the home. Out here a huge gazebo rests, its gauzy curtains blowing in the night air. Beyond the gazebo, the river we followed here glows a pale blue-green. The luminescent river cascades into the shallow pool in front of us. On the opposite end of it, the water pours off, slipping farther down the mountain. Dez releases my hand, reaching behind him to pull the back of his shirt over his head. His magic parts the material as it passes around his wing joints, reforming once more once it's above them. He shucks the shirt off, cutting across the gazebo and towards the water. He lifts a foot, tugging off one of those huge boots of his and then the other. Dez looks over his shoulder.
"Need any help, Cherub?"
he asks. Before I can respond, I feel my own clothes loosen, magically peeling away from my body like the skin of a banana. I let out a little yelp as they slip from my flesh, falling into a pile of rags at my feet, leaving me exquisitely bare. Dez strides over to me, the last of his clothes sliding off of him. Am I ever going to get over the sight of him in all his glory or the way he looks at me? He pauses when he gets to me. Then, taking my face in his hands, he kisses me deeply.
I've imagined taking you here for years,
he admits when he breaks away. You have? I ask. He takes my hand, walking backwards through the gazebo and towards the river.
Many times.
I take in the scenery with new eyes. It's dizzying to think he imagined taking me here when I could not have imagined a place like this even existed. His voice drops low.
Over our time apart, I've gotten very imaginative when it comes to you.
Jesus. Just him saying that sends a bolt of heat through me. The way he's looking at me doesn't help either. He stares at me like I'm his starlight and he's the darkness preparing to devour me.
Perhaps.
He backs up the water's edge, his first foot dipping into the water.
If you play your cards right tonight, I'll even share a few of my more creative ideas. For a price, of course.
I'm pretty sure whatever price he asks for, I'll be more than willing to pay. First, my toes dip into the water, then the tips of my wings. Inch by inch, my naked body submerges itself into the water. There's something about this place, with the heavy scent of jasmine and moist earth in the air, and the intoxicating sensation of Dez's full attention on me, that has my breath hitching and my eyelids lowering. My breasts feel heavy and my core aches. Perhaps it's this island, the city of lovers. Or perhaps it's just the strange magic between us, but he has me fully under his thrall. I want him to drown me in the madness of this, us. Dez watches me the entire time, the glow of the water reflected in his eyes. It's a strange sensation, letting someone you trust see you bare. It's frightening and exhilarating all at once. My eyelids flutter. The siren is calling out for me to dive deep into the pool and soak in its waters. My eyes briefly flick to the moon above us. Here, in this small glowing pool, both of our primordial natures are satisfied. I'm guessing that was no mistake on his part. I step up to Dez, our damp chests brushing. Idly, I trace the tattoos that cover his arm, the action sending a small shiver through him.
Keep doing that, love, and I'm not going to be able to draw this evening out like I want to,
he says, his voice rough. One glance at his face and I know he's serious. I also know that it's not helping my own willpower. Maybe I don't want this drawn out. Maybe I want the king of the night to be fast and fierce rather than slow and cruel. Dez wraps an arm around my waist and pulls me to his chest. He leans in and gives each side of my neck a kiss, his deliciously damp hair dripping against my skin.
I could get lost in you,
he murmurs. He wraps my legs around his narrow waist and I feel the brush of his cock, already hard and ready. The sensation of it makes my face flush.
What's this?
He whispers, kissing my reddening cheeks.
Is my siren bashful?
I let out a husky laugh. He's such a scoundrel even when he's being endearing. He nuzzles the side of my face.
I would steal the stars from the sky for you,
he whispers into my ear.
Anything to hear you laugh like that.
You wouldn't have to steal them, Dez, I say. I bet you could strike a deal with them and they'd come down for you. His eyes crinkle with amusement.
You give me far too much credit.
Rather than answering, my mouth finds his, taking it roughly, my hand splayed along his cheek. Let that be answer enough. His hold tightens on me, pulling my pelvis closer even as his lips match my passion. He groans into my mouth, his arms tightening around my back. I move against him, my body impatient for his, my skin beginning to illuminate. It's been so long, far too long. Suddenly I don't have a decent reason why that is. Our bodies have a lot of catching up to do. He breaks away from the kiss long enough to lean his forehead against mine. His eyes search mine, looking for permission. I move against him once more, silently encouraging him on. He shifts my body ever so slightly, lining us up, and then he slides into me, his head resting against mine, his eyes devouring my expression. It's all I can do not to moan as I feel him enter me. And yet this is so much more than just sex. It's him and me and this place. If I could drink him up, I would. He's my guilty conscience, my nightmare, my mate. The man that drinks espresso out of tiny cups and sometimes wears his hair in ridiculous man buns. The same man who likes the wild, wicked parts of me that even I'm not always comfortable with. I roll my head back, staring up at the stars. There are thousands upon thousands of them, and their light kisses my skin. Between each one of them is unfathomable darkness. It's all around me, inside me, making love to me. Des pistons in and out of my core, his cock stretching me in the most exquisite way. I wrap my arms around him, pressing myself in close. It's no longer just the water that's glowing. My skin is lit up, the siren thoroughly enjoying the water around us and the man inside us. Right in the middle of the act, he moves us near the waterfall where the rocky mountainside creates a wall of sorts. Pressing my back against it, the bargainer takes my wrists and forces them against the rocky surface. "Truth or dare?" he rasps, still thrusting in and out of me. "Wait, is he kidding?" When I don't immediately answer because my brain shut off several minutes ago, he slides out of me. I let out a pained sound, feeling empty without Des between my legs. I should know my wily fairy better by now. He dips underwater, moving my legs over his shoulders, and then, right in the middle of the pool, I feel the press of his lips against my core. Now I let out the moan I held back earlier, and thank God Des is underwater. It's one hell of an embarrassing sound. As I lean back against the rock wall, panting, I piece together that this is Des's dare. For once, I'm not complaining about the bargainer's repayment methods. God, am I not? He sucks first one lip into his mouth, then the other. I buck against him, his ministrations driving me wild. His tongue finds my clit, and an unexpected orgasm rips from the depths of me. I cry out as I move against him, my fingers buried in his hair. How the clever man knows I've come is beyond me. Like I said, my brain shut off long ago, but my legs slide from his shoulders as he rises up, and then in one smooth thrust, his cock is back inside me, working me from the inside out.
"Ready for number two?"
he asks. He doesn't even sound breathless. Multiple orgasms? Who is this man? He begins moving harder, deeper, and like a puppet master, he's pulling the strings of my body, dragging me back to the edge. I tighten my grip on him. It's rough and it's sweet, relentless and coaxing. I'm almost regretting that I wanted this to be swift and fierce. With Des, I could stay like this forever. Hypothetically. Realistically, the moment he kisses me, I'm done. Like a dam breaking, I find my second release. I'm gasping into his mouth, holding on to him like he's the only thing keeping me from floating away. And then he's coming too, his lips still moving firmly against mine, his thrusts becoming even deeper and harder. It seems like we spend an eternity in that moment, locked together, and there's no beginning or end to us. But at some point, the moment does end. We break off the kiss, and Des eases out of me. Neither one of us lets go of the other, our breathing heavy, our bodies plastered together.
"Never want to leave,"
Des rasps against me. My grip on his tightens. "Neither do I." I don't know how long we stay like that. Long enough for my skin to dim and our breathing to quiet.
cherub,
Daz eventually says.
There's something I wanted to show you.
With a good amount of reluctance, I slide out of his hold. Taking my hand, he tugs me towards the waterfall, my feet skimming over smooth river stones as we move. We move beneath the cascading waters, the river pounding against my head and shoulders as Dez leads me through it. On the other side, the glow of the water illuminates the outlines of a cave. Dez snaps his fingers, and all at once, there's a light. Hundreds of flickering candles are piled on almost every surface of the cavern, glittering softly in the darkness. The light from the water and the flames dances along the ceiling, the glow of it hypnotizing. Wow, I breathe. The place is like something out of a dream. Right in the middle of all the candlelight is a soft pallet piled with blankets, a tray of food sitting next to it. Dez swims to the edge of the pool and pushes himself up onto the rocky lip of the cave, running his hands through his hair as he slicks it back. He turns and reaches for me, every inch of that glorious body of his glistening. I take Dez's hand and follow him out of the water, my wings heavy. Before I can look for a towel, he reaches around me and runs a hand over my feathers. A warm brush of magic tickles my back, and in an instant, my wings, skin, and hair are all dry. When I glance at him again, I notice that he, too, has dried himself. That's about the moment I realize that Dez and I are both still naked. It's both odd and oddly enjoyable to be laid bare like this in front of each other. There are so many firsts I'm only now experiencing with this man. I step up to the pallet and fold my knees under me, stretching my wings out behind my back. In here, the churning sound of the waterfall echoes. This feels like some primitive temple, and Dez the god it pays homage to. The bargainer sits down next to me, the tips of his wings lifting to rest themselves on a nearby rock. He takes in our surroundings.
After all this time, I find myself back in a cave,
he says wryly. His words remind me of those caverns back in Orestes. There's a vulnerability to him in this moment. Even now, he struggles to let down his guard. I want to tell him that this place is perfect, that he's perfect, that I cherish every broken bit of him. But I don't say any of this. He is, after all, at his core, just as uncomfortable with emotional intimacy as I am. Instead, I reach out and run my hand over his wings. He closes his eyes, like he's savoring the sensation. Getting up, I circle behind him, studying the silvery skin of them as my hand passes over each talon and joint. Beneath my touch, I feel him shiver. His wings stretch in response, the fine veins of them clearly visible even here in the dim lighting. I always assumed that fairies had butterfly wings, I admit.
You're not wrong,
Dez says, his back still to me.
Mine are particularly rare.
He turns long enough to wrap his arms around my waist and pull me back to the soft pallet, his hands drifting down to cup my ass. This naturally makes my skin come to life as the siren wakes up. Dez's expression, of course, is one of complete innocence. I give him a look that says, I'm on to you. His eyes crinkle and he laughs.
So suspicious of my motives. It's like you think I'm just trying to get into your pants.
As if he's not. He's a slippery fucker. You say that as though you didn't literally strip me of my pants 5 minutes ago, I say.
I think it was a little more than 5 minutes ago.
I barely managed to not roll my eyes. Apparently human or fairy, male egos are still very much the same. Dez spreads his body out next to mine, his hand lingering on the dip where my waist is. The warm, humid air of the place caresses my skin and curls my hair. Propping myself up, I reach out and continue to trace what I can of Dez's wings. So, all fairies have insect wings but you? I ask. He shakes his head.
Most do, but not all,
he says, running his hand up my waist and over my rib cage.
There are other wing types, too. Some fairies have avian wings, like yours.
Why are yours different? I ask. He stares off in the distance, his thumb absently stroking my skin, drawing out goosebumps.
Some say my lines descended from dragons,
he murmurs, the candlelight dancing over his body.
Others say that we come from demons.
Dragons? Demons? Damn. I'm not going to pretend I understand how fairy lineages work. I always thought they looked like bat wings, I admit.
Bat wings?
Dez raises his eyebrows, his gaze refocusing on me. I'm pretty sure that once again I've offended him, but then he throws his head back and lets out a laugh. So what is it, dragon or demon? I ask. Dez lifts a shoulder, his expression still playful.
The family history goes so far back that no one remembers.
I think about Dez's mother, the scribe, telling a small boy with white hair all sorts of stories, and amongst them tales of his heritage. I smile a little at the thought. I can't imagine being told dragons existed, and that I might be descended from one of them.
What is it?
Dez asks, touching a finger to my lower lip like he wants to steal my smile for himself. I shake my head. I'm just imagining you as a boy listening to stories from your mother about your ancestors. Immediately, Dez's expression shuts down. I've said the wrong thing, I know it. I expect him to pull away and run like all those times he used to. I'm steeling my heart against the possibility. But he doesn't run. He doesn't leave. He simply says,
"The stories are from my father's side of the family."
The same father that had something to do with his mother's death. Yikes. I reassess Dez's wings. I hadn't realized that they might represent something terrible about his past, the same way mine did. It's odd to look at his wings and see something very different than what he must. I ask softly, "What do you think? That you're descended from demons or dragons?"
"Knowing my father? Demons."
My throat works. I really, really want to ask him about his father, but I can't bring myself to form the words. There's clearly an ocean of bitterness and anger buried beneath that relationship. "Well," I say, running a hand over the fine bones of the wing closest to me, "whatever their origin, I think they're perfect." Beneath my touch, a tremor runs through Dez's body.
"That doesn't scare you?"
he asks.
"That I might have a little demon blood running through me?"
I shrug. "You met me the day I killed my stepfather. I finger one of his talons. And I've seen you execute men. I think we're past that." At my words, Dez's eyes deepen. He pulls me in close, one of his wings covering me like a blanket. He kisses the tip of my nose, then rests his chin against the crown of my head.
"Thank you, Cherub,"
he says softly. I'm not sure what he's thanking me for, but I nod against him anyway, stroking his face. Eventually, my eyes drift closed, my body warmed by Dez's. And that is how we spend our first night on Leffy's. Not in the palatial home beyond the pool, but in this humble cave, our naked bodies tangled together. Chapter 14. When Dez and I finally return to the city of Somnia, something about me is noticeably different. I no longer hate my wings, or my scales or claws. Somehow, during the course of a week, I found the very things that frightened me about myself now empower me. I can fly. I can cut a bitch with my bare hands. There's strength in that, whether Carnon intended it or not. My training with Dez has also bolstered my courage. I swear my arms and legs are more defined, and even though I haven't been able to land a blow on Dez yet, I'm beginning to fight with more confidence. I won't admit this to Dez, but I'm glad he forced me to train with him. I might hate the process, but I kind of dig the results. I also am coming to love the sweet pair of blades strapped to my hips. They clink against my clothing now as Dez and I walk down the familiar hallways of his palace.
The tower room Dez leads me to is one of the coolest places in the palace. Made of floor-to-ceiling glass window panes, the tower room gives me a bird's-eye view of all of Somnia, from the castle grounds to the city spread out beyond it. Aside from the lanterns hanging overhead, the only piece of furniture in the room is a massive table currently set for two. Spread out on it is what looks and smells suspiciously like Indian food. My favorite. Dez swaggers over to the table, wearing the same dark pants and shit-kicking boots that he did back on Earth, his hair tied back with a leather cord. I stare at the thick bands of muscle and the inked skin of his arms as he pulls out a chair for me. The only Fae addition to his attire at the moment are the three bronze war cuffs that ring one bicep, and that pretty much just adds to his sex appeal at this point. I slide into the seat he offers, watching him take his own. Before I can even begin to serve myself, he does it for me. A plate of aloo gobi and another of rice lift into the air and meander over to me. While I begin to scoop out a helping, a teapot moves to the mug in front of my plate, and it pours me a cup of chai. "How did you even get your hands on this stuff?" I ask as I finish serving myself. Dez leans back in his seat, looking all too proud of himself.
"There are perks to being a king."
He spends a good 5 minutes watching me eat before he joins me. I know the man likes good Indian food himself. He's the one that introduced me to the cuisine, but he seems more interested in my enjoyment than his own.
"Mind mixing a little business with dinner?"
Dez asks eventually. I shrug. Now that we're back in Somnia, it's back to work for Dez and back to finding things to do with myself for me. There's pretty much nothing worse than boredom, so I'll take a little business with dinner if it gives me something to do. I use my napkin to wipe my mouth. "What's up?" Dez snaps his fingers and a sheet of parchment appears in midair, fluttering down in front of me. I don't reach it before it lands on the plate of chicken tikka masala, the food's oily orange sauce bleeding onto the paper. Leaning forward, I grab the sheet of parchment and use my napkin to dab the sauce off of it. "Was that really necessary?" I ask, frowning when my efforts to clean the paper only end up further smearing sauce all over it. On the parchment is a chart of sorts. One column containing a list of names, another containing gender, another containing dates and times, another location, and then finally a column containing what looks to be notes. The bargainer nods to the paper.
"That's a list of all the soldiers who've disappeared within the last 3 months," he says, taking a sip of his chai.
I raise my eyebrows, looking at the chart all over again. The sight of so many names is staggering, and this list includes not just the missing female soldiers, but the missing male ones as well. So far, Dez and I haven't talked much about the men who have disappeared from the Kingdom of Night, mostly because, unlike the women, the men who vanished have not reappeared, giving us no clues as to what might have happened to them.
"Notice anything unusual?"
Dez asks, watching me from over the rim of his cup. I continue to skim the chart. "You know, if there's something you want me to notice, you could just come out and say..." My words dry up when I get to the dates. Since Dez killed Karnon, no women have disappeared, but 5 men have. I glance up at the bargainer. The men are still vanishing. Dez looks out the window at the twinkling city below.
"Many men disappear in the Night Kingdom,"
he says conversationally.
"It could be nothing."
I can practically hear the but that follows his statement. "What is it?" I ask, lowering the parchment. He takes another sip of his tea.
4 of the last 5 men who've gone missing are soldiers.
Too many disappearances to be a coincidence, which means... it's not over. The paper rustles a little as my hand begins to tremble. "But you killed him," I say softly. Dez's eyes soften as he gazes at me.
"I killed Karnon."
It takes me a few more seconds to put together what Dez isn't saying. When I do, my eyes widen. Someone else is taking the men. Chapter 15. Carnon only ever took the women. Now that Dez killed him, those disappearances have stopped. The paper in my hand says as much. But the men... So you think there's more than one person behind this? I stare at Dez across the table, dumbfounded. But why? And how? Dez runs a hand through his white blonde hair, his arm muscles rippling.
I'm working on that.
Just then Malachi comes into the room, his strides long and powerful, looking every inch the pirate with his eye patch and scruffy cheeks. He drops a large waxy leaf on the table.
Solstice invite, the third one they've sent for the record.
He crinkles his nose.
Ugh, what's that smell?
He says, grimacing at the plates of Indian food scattered across the table. Did he actually just scorn my dinner? Dez leans back in his seat, crossing his arms over his chest.
We're not going to Solstice this year.
Malachi takes a seat, a plate and place settings appearing in front of him. A moment later, he reaches for the tray of samosas. Really? I say derisively to him, raising my eyebrows. A moment ago, he'd been hating on my dinner, and now he's about to eat it. That's how you're going to play this? He gives me a confused look as he adds the samosa to his plate. Turning his attention to Dez, he says,
That's a really bad idea.
Dez lifts a shoulder.
Last time Callie visited another kingdom, she was someone's prisoner.
And then you killed that kingdom's king,
Malachi says smoothly.
I think everyone knows not to fuck with your mate.
We're not going,
Dez repeats.
Being a mate does not mean you stop being a king. Careful!
Dez's words cut through the room like a whip, his power riding them. Malachi sits back in his seat, bowing his head.
Apologies, my king.
The bargainer's body seems to ease, and the power that thickened the air moments ago now recedes.
Loi du royaume,
Dez says quietly. Malachi's mouth goes grim.
I know.
I glance between the two men. So far I've been somewhat able to follow the conversation, but now they lost me. What's that? I ask. That phrase you just said. Dez nods to his friend.
Tell her, Malachi. If she's to go and subject herself to Solstice because you think it's a good idea, then you tell her what she's going to have to sacrifice.
Malachi sighs, then turns his attention to me.
You know the human saying, when in Rome, do as the Romans do?
I squint at him. You actually know that phrase? He doesn't strike me as the kind of fairy who hangs out on Earth.
Do you know it?
He presses. Looking from him to Dez, I hesitantly nod.
That's the law here in the other world.
I'm still not following.
When in the Night Kingdom, Malachi explains, a fairy must follow their laws. Dez here doesn't want you to leave the Night Kingdom because you'll both be subject to another Fae Kingdom's laws.
That's pretty much how it works on Earth, I say, confused as to why this is an issue.
The Flora Kingdom enslaves humans.
Dez cuts in. Ah, and therein lies the true problem.
Boom!
The room shakes as a wave of magic washes over us, throwing me back into my seat. Our plates and utensils rattle on the table, a few falling off the edge and crashing to the floor. In the distance, I hear muffled gasps. The three of us look at each other. What in the... All at once, we're moving, my chair toppling behind me in my haste to figure out what's going on. Malachi, Dez, and I rush from the room, dinner, missing men, and slave-holding kingdoms forgotten. Out in the halls, fairies are dashing around, trying to find shelter. One of the palace officers runs to us, bowing hastily to Dez.
There's been a security breach, he explains, his voice breathless. One of the portals is down. Something's crossed over and collapsed it.
Gather 100 of my best soldiers and have them meet us in the air.
As soon as Dez gives the order, the officer is off, running back the way he came. We begin to move again. Rather than heading down to the main floor of the palace, I follow Dez and Malachi to one of the castle balconies. My eyes scour the horizon, looking for something, anything to explain that violent wave of magic. It had felt so familiar. Dez tears his gaze from the horizon to look at me. His lips part, and I'm pretty sure this is where he tells me to get back inside. Instead, he closes his mouth and squares his jaw. Striding over to me, he clasps the back of my neck.
"Do you wish to join me?"
he asks. "Always." It's less thought than it is instinct. Where my mate goes, I go.
"Desmond," Malachi protests. "This will be dangerous,"
he warns me, ignoring his friend.
"Either of us could die. Are you still sure?"
My heart thumps like mad.